go.
Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
This is the third part of my interview with Officer Rick Jackson, retired LAPD, now a cold case investigator with San Mateo, California County Sheriff's Office. This past year, best-selling author Michael Connelly ventured into the podcast arena with his murder book podcast. It's now ended, but the episodes are all available on iTunes and other podcast formats, and there's also a link at michaelconnelly.com. The podcast told the true story of a 1987 carjacking murder in Los Angeles, and the case would unfold over the span of 30 years. Witnesses came and went. New evidence was discovered. New scientific techniques were developed to analyze that evidence. And all the while, the defendant, Pierre Romain, was pursuing a law enforcement career. Absolutely crazy story. Rick, this Pierre Romain case, it was your case. Completely bizarre as to why it took 30 years to bring to a conclusion. Before we talk about the case, how did the podcast idea come up?
You know, it's funny. What happened, I was down in L.A. preparing to testify, I don't know, in 2017. You know, the trial hadn't started, but I was going to meet with the D.A. and go through my investigation. It started 30 years before. And so I was staying at Mike's house, Michael Connelly's house, and we met for dinner. And we had two separate cars. So after dinner, I said, hey, I'm not coming back right away. I'm going to walk down the street and go through my crime scene. And he, what the hell are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, I'm down here on this case, the Romain case, and he'd heard a little bit about it. And I said, the crime scene's right down the street, because I'm, you know, so while I'm here, I'm going to walk down, and I want to walk through it again. And so I've got everything fresh in my mind when I testify. And Mike, being Mike, says, well, you know, do you mind if I go? So I said, sure, come on. So anyway, we went down and walked through the crime scene where the shooting occurred and the attempted carjacking, and then we walked around the block to where the getaway car was eventually seen and where a witness had looked out of a window after hearing shots and seeing what he saw that was an important part of the case. And you know, we spent about 45 minutes talking about this case, and then about a week later he says, you know, I've been thinking about doing a podcast, going into the podcast world, because it's journalism. And he goes, and I miss my days of journalism. I loved it. And this is kind of the new journalism. I'm going to do a podcast, and I want to do this Romain case first. And I, you know, would you do it with me? And I said, of course. And it was a great experience. But that's how the whole thing originated as far as choosing this case for season one.
Well, the term murder book has a special significance. What is it?
Yeah, the murder book, you know, with LAPD, it's what we call our case file, and it's just a generic name that's been used for years and years, and it's the, you know, generally they're blue binders, blue plastic binders, and it's got everything in it, hard copies of everything. They're now into digital form, but detectives still want that hard copy to carry around with them when they go out and do interviews, when they go back to a crime scene to look at. They want hard copy photos in front of them to compare things and look at things. And it's got all the interviews in it, all the reports, photos of the victim, photos of the suspect. It's right there and available, and it's the heart and soul of a murder investigation. And Mike loved that term and thus chose it for the name of his podcast.
So just brief synopsis. I know it's a complicated case, but if you can kind of summarize the Pierre Romain case.
Yeah, well, it started out, I mean, I got called out, it was, you know, 1987, summertime of 1987, on a main street there in Hollywood, and it was the middle of the night. It was across the street from a nightclub that was just letting out about 2 in the morning, and our victim and his best friend were sitting in a nice little sporty car across the street, and all of a sudden somebody walked up and pulled a gun, put it at his face, and said, get out of the car. Not quite in those words, but what happened is the attempted carjacking ensued, and our victim, for whatever reason, did not just want to give up the car, you know, and he paid for it, but he had a gun also. He was not a gang member or anything. He was just a good kid that, you know, worked hard, and he had a gun for protection, and he pulled the gun, and it was kind of a standoff. The suspect fired, the victim fired one round. It didn't go very far. It fell onto the ground, and the suspect shot a lot more rounds than the victim did, and he ran off. But finding that bullet, and the season's called the Telltale Bullet, finding that bullet that night that had just dropped after it was fired by the victim, eventually we would find tissue and fibers, clothing fibers on it, so we knew it hit somebody. Eventually, about a month later, the suspect was identified. He was a Roland 60 gang member with prior criminal history. And eventually arrest was made, and some things happened with witnesses and some of the evidence that we were going to be able to use, and we had to dismiss the case after about 4 or 5 months. And I kept track of it for a while, kept looking at it, hoping some new information would develop, and but nothing did until about 16 years later. I get a call from San Francisco Police Department, and the suspect, Pierre Romaine, the former Roland 60 gang member, was an applicant with San Francisco Police Department. And I kind of laughed and said, don't worry about it. He's never going to be a cop. Come on down, spend the day with me, and you'll have ammunition that will keep him from ever going into law enforcement. And the investigator from San Francisco kind of laughed and said, well, do you have any idea what this guy does right now? And I said, no. He says, he's a federal law enforcement officer, sworn police officer, can carry weapons on planes. And I kind of fell on the floor just about. And anyway, that kind of started the ensuing reinvestigation, which basically resulted in recharging Romaine with some witnesses that we got back because of some interesting developments that we lost previously. And it took another 13 years. Most of that time, he was out on bail, believe it or not, until the case went to trial. And I won't give away what happens because it's such a bizarre case. It's worth listening to, and not knowing how it's going to end. If people out there like podcasts, so.
Well, and for you, the investigation was not really a whodunit. It was mostly a how do we prove he done it, right?
Right, yeah. We had to get admissible evidence in, and we'd lost a lot of that because of some bizarre things that will play out if you listen to the podcast. There were like three or four different things that were so unique in this investigation that none of those three or four things had happened in any one of my other cases over almost three decades of working homicide, and yet they all happened in this one case. So it was a bizarre case, and I think that's part of the reason Mike chose it, because it's a short story that takes 30 years to unfold, because we knew within a month who the suspect was.
When, and as I listened to the podcast, because I listened to it as they would pop up every week, and these were actually done in real time. I mean, you're in the courtroom listening, Mike's people, or maybe Mike himself had the recorder in there. That's kind of risky from an entertainment standpoint, because God knows what can happen in a trial, and you know, it could derail the whole thing if there's a continuance or something like that, right?
Yeah, and there were continuances that happened that were unexpected that drove the podcast to be even longer. And the irony is, Mike, right from the get go, when he talked to me about wanting to do this as a podcast, the first season, said, do you think the judge would allow us to audio record in the courtroom, because it'd be great to play snippets of trial and snippets of the closing argument and opening statements by the attorneys. And I said, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to get involved in that because I'm a player in this, but you know, you should be able to get a meeting with the judge to see if he would be agreeable to it. And I said, but if anybody can pull it off, it's probably you, because every time I see the judge, he asks me when Conley's coming out with a new book, because so, he's a Conley fan on his reading lists and stuff. So the judge approved it. You know, they approve this kind of stuff all the time for audio and obviously for TV coverage of certain trials.
Well, there was a really strange twist in the case, and I don't think I'm giving anything too much away. One of the main government eyewitnesses wanted to bolster his testimony by getting himself hypnotized to remember more details. But yes. In doing so, he ended up destroying his chance at becoming a witness. So how helpless does that make you feel as an investigator when some witness takes it upon himself to do something like that?
Yeah, and he did it from a good... He did it from having a good heart. He just felt like he must have seen something more than he saw. I mean, it was a shocking incident to see your buddy right, you know, shot right there sitting next to you. And so he went out on his own. He had no idea that this would hamper his ability to be a witness, and it did under the law in 1987. But then eventually, because of some pretty good thinking on the part of the DA and me as well, I recommended the guy. We went to a doctor at Stanford who is is probably the world's leading expert on forensic hypnosis, and he tested the kid. And now a young man, not now a middle-aged man, all these years later, and found out that he had the lowest score he's ever given on a hypnotizability index that he had developed and had been used in court before. And so it was able to be used to bring him back as a witness that we had lost 20-something years before. So that became really crucial because without him, no one can tell the story of what happened in that little cubicle of what is called a sports car and the man standing right outside it, you know, with a gun pointing it at our victim. So it's just that was one of the great ironies of the case is that the delay in all this really helped us get a conviction, I think, because we wouldn't have probably been able to do that without certain things that, including DNA, the development of DNA, which we didn't have in 1987, to look at the tissue on that bullet that went through our suspect's arm.
Well, now that the case is over, the podcast is over, does it feel weird not to have this thing living with you as part of a day-to-day?
Yeah, kind of, because that's been part of my life for, like I said, I think I even did an interview. I think it was actually in the podcast. On the final episode of the podcast, I said it, that case has been with me for almost half my life, 1987 to 2019. So that's 32 years, and I'm 67 years old. So it's almost half time, the time in my life that I've had that case being a part of me. And I'm very close to the victim's mother, who has endured all kinds of illnesses to see this finally get back into the court system again. So that was special.
All right. I've been chatting with Rick Jackson, retired LAPD detective, now with San Mateo County Sheriff's Office, about the Murder Book podcast that he did with Michael Conley. It's available on iTunes. You can get a link there. It's also on michaelconley.com and other podcast formats, I'm sure. And Conley's new book, The Night Fire, comes out in October. Rick, we're going to wrap this up next week when we talk about your work in cold cases, all right?
Sounds good, Brian. Take care.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.